You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 222. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. We got a jam-packed episode today. We're going to be talking about NoFX and the boot to the face. We're going to be talking about Buzzcocks. We're going to be talking about all your favorite punk rock heroes being made into video games. We're going to be talking about the Riverboat Gamblers selling stuff via Bitcoin as if, I mean, who knows if they're worth anything anymore. We're going to be talking about Jesse Michaels making even more cinematic excellence. We're going to be talking about Steve Ignorant. We're going to be talking about a unknown rare French band. And, of course, as always, we're going to be talking about Ramones. In this case, we're going to be talking about CJ Ramone. And here with us is a guy. And, you know, he's been called Dad for about a year and a half now. But now he's going to be called Pop Pop or Dad Dad. Why, you ask? We are here with Managing Editor Adam White, who has one kid, but I don't know, about 6 months from now or so, he's going to have dos babinos. Adam White, what's it like to have a baby on the way? What is it like to have a full family under your roof?
We need more roof. It's weird because, first, hi, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm just interested about your
So anyways, it's something that we wanted and it's happening now, which is cool. So but yeah, it's all of a sudden like put our whole lives into the property starting pistol has gone off. So suddenly the house that we're in looks way too small to have two kids in it. So now we are not just like birthing another child. We're also birthing property and things. So yeah, it's going to get really busy.
Adam White, how many kids are you going to have? 5, 6, 7?
I'm cool with two.
Two? See, two is nice because they get along, they all get plenty of attention. But there's something to be said for, like, five kids. You know what I mean? Four or five.
Well,
kids.
Yeah, if you got to, like, dig a really deep well or, like let's say you were trying to, you know, start a coal mine that stretched out under the Atlantic Ocean. You'd want all sorts of children to go in there because a coal mine is dangerous. So you need lots of labor.
Very true. Now, Adam White, you've got an older daughter, I believe. She's about 2 by now, I think.
She should be 2 this month.
Is a 2-year-old aware? Like, is a 2-year-old cognizant of what's going on around her?
No.
Oh, no?
Well, like, only in the most, like, random and hedonistic sense of being aware.
Does she know that a baby is on the way?
No, I don't think so.
Well, that can be good because, sometimes kids, they're jealous of the younger ones, but sometimes they're as excited as the parents. How will you manage those expectations?
I don't know. I haven't been in this situation before, John. I have no idea what.
Well, I'm thinking that we should just transfer the Punk News Podcast to the Parenting Podcast, and every week we'll talk about new parenting issues.
Well, I can probably come up with a new one every week, but it's probably super boring if people want to hear us talk about the transplant. It's just music.
That's my phone going off. But related, we're also here with Ricky Frankel, reviews writer, and now Golden Boy interviewer. And you say, why is Ricky Frankel the Golden Boy interviewer? The reason is he recently went down. He said to me, John, I want to go see the Edward Culver photo exhibit. Can I do a review? I said, Ricky, yeah, go ahead, man. It'll be cool. Edward Culver, he did lots of famous punk rock posters, lots of famous punk rock album covers, lots of famous punk rock pictures. He did the cover for Damage, namely Damage by Black Flag. So, Ricky, you waltzed on down there. You know, you told your 9 or 10 girlfriends that you had to go out on the town. You couldn't give them any attention today. What happened when you got down to the photo exhibit?
Well, let's see. I originally wanted to go opening day, and that was going to be in, like, September. That was September, but whatever. I think I was sick then, and we had some family problems. We had like a family death and all that stuff. So I remember, I completely forgot I was going to review this. And then in I guess it was late last month, I drove down to downtown LA to this tiny little like skateboard shop / art gallery. It's called Lethal Amounts. And there was, you know, like maybe 5 or 6 people there. Apparently the first day it was like 15 to 2,000 people were there. But I parked my car, I just take a look around, and I walk by this guy, this old, taller, older looking guy in like a gray jacket. And it doesn't really faze me to like, you know, say, you know, see who it is. I just kind of walk in just to get kind of get an idea of what to review and stuff like that. When I walked in, it was just a punk rocker's paradise. It was like walking through history, and it was so fucking cool what Edward Culver took pictures of. And it was what I learned from the gallery owner who was there. Edward Culver went to shows from 5 days a week in LA from 1978 to 1984 for 5 days a week and took pictures. Now, what I later learned was that he had no training. He just did it all, you know, DIY, which I thought added so much more to it. But he did, you know, a ton of Jello Biafra pictures, Minor Threat. He had a portrait of, what's it called? It was Black Flag, but it was a portrait of them when Bill Stevenson was still in the band. Darby Crash, he took a portrait of Darby Crash just days before he died. Minor Threat. He was at the first Stray Cats show.
Was Stray Cats. I mean, forget about Black Flag and Jello. It was Stray Cats.
There was a picture of Brian Setzer there that was unbelievable. It was really great stuff. I think he did the Damned. Anyone that played the LA scene were there. And I'm looking around. I'm like, God, if I can just get one of these, this would be amazing. But the prints were like limited to like 3 copies for $900 each or more. I'm just like, no, there was no way I could have done that. But I bought his book, what I later found out was that the guy in the gray suit was actually Edward Culver. And he showed me around and told me about the different pictures and stuff like that. And so he was showing me around, but I still had no idea it was him until he told me who he was. I thought it was just like the curator or something like that. So, and he didn't know I was there for punk news until I told him. He gave me different stories and different, from different pictures. Not only did they have the Black Flag Damage, cover up there, they also had outtakes of what they were thinking about using too.
That's cool.
Very cool. They also had pictures of, he also did the Group Sex album by the Circle Jerks. He did, How Could Hell Be Any Worse cover. He did the Ribbed cover for by NoFX, and he did what else did he do? Oh, I'm blanking on one of the other ones. But he did a lot, and I didn't realize it. And then it was closing time, and I told him I'd buy his book, and I was ready to leave. Next thing I know, he says, "Hey, Ricky, do you want to come to dinner with me and my wife and the gallery owner?" I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll do that. That sounds cool. So I just started asking all sorts of stuff about the punk scene back then, and about the LA punk scene, and and we just had dinner. It was great. And then he gave me his card, and I asked him if we could do an interview, and I did the interview 2 weeks ago, about a week and a half ago now. So that'll be typed up soon, and yeah.
Well, that sounds awesome. I know I'm definitely looking forward to that. So stay on the lookout for that, kid. I mean, that's going to be one hell of an interview. I mean, honestly, Ricky, you might have conducted the most in-depth interview with Edward Culver ever. You know, I mean, I know there are a few interviews with him, but very few, like, extensive, deep ones like that. So I'm totally excited, dude. Good work.
Thank you. What was really interesting, though, he was telling me about how a lot of people on the internet used his photos without either paying him or giving him credit. And I also one of the things I asked him in my interview was about being in the American Hardcore documentary, and he only had like 5 seconds in it. And this guy is full of it's gold what this guy can tell you about the LA punk scene. It is gold, just the fact that I thought what really spoke to me was that he was completely self-taught. Which, if you see his pictures, which you can see on his website, you can see some of them. They're iconic pictures. They're iconic live punk photos. So, yeah, it was very cool to meet him and his wife. He showed me. I went to his house for the interview, and he showed me around. He showed me all these. He took me to his garage, which is full of records and stuff like that. And he had like some really awesome ones, some ones that were in horrible taste, but like and completely politically incorrect, but like they were historical artifacts. Basically, there was even a 7-inch or like a 10-inch or something like that of the sounds of, this will fit the theme actually, of childbirth.
That's wild.
I'm not kidding, and it was from 1952.
Who would put that, like, who would say, oh, we need to put that out? But
I guess they were just recording anything back then.
You're probably right, honestly, because recording technology was fairly new, you know? Yeah. Well, that's wild, Ricky. That's super fantastic. I know. I'm super excited for that. We're going to make a pretty big deal about it at Punk News. We're probably going to be doing a multi-part series. We'll see. So be sure to stay on the lookout for that. Ricky did an awesome job, and that's super exciting. Completely unrelated. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And we actually got an email from Dana. If you remember, about 3 or 4 weeks ago on the Punk News podcast, it was myself, it was Tom Trauma, I think it was Mark Little, and it was Scotty Tank Crimes of Tank Crimes Records. We talked about the Mastodon video that had the twerking girls in it. And basically, I mean, my opinion was that it wasn't sexist. And I think some of the guys didn't think it was sexist. Some of the guys did think it was sexist. Dana sent me an email, and I said, Dana, well, why don't you tell me what your opinion of it is? Because she disagreed with my point of view, and here's what Dana had to say. I think it is important to give a voice to the people that these issues directly impact. She's saying that we should have gotten a female's opinion. It's pretty obvious that a misogynistic video affects feminine folks, not to mention the cultural appropriation of twerking for the profit of white people. But what is less obvious is that the issue of stage diving also disproportionately affects femme folk, smaller bodied people, and people with disabilities. And actually, we talked about this on the same podcast. Both Scotty and I were very pro stage diving. Mark Little was anti. I think Tom Trauma was pro. Dana continues. Of course, a bunch of mostly able-bodied men are going to find no issue with stage diving. They are physically equipped to handle it. Did you know that they recently passed a law in the UK that all comedy panel TV shows must include at least one woman? That's the kind of attitude I'd love to see with regards to this podcast, making diversity a priority. It may seem like I'm making a big deal out of something insignificant, but come on, this is punk rock. I've spilled blood over limited variant vinyl releases. I have too. Well, that might be an exaggeration, but you get what I mean. Punks sweat the small stuff. I love the podcast. None of my friends feel as passionately about punk as I do, so it's refreshing to finally hear conversations being had about the things that drive me. I just like to hear these conversations being had by a panel that better reflects the diversity of the punk community. Punk News has a big influence in a community small enough to embrace change. Why not take it? And so, so thank you very much for the email, Dana. I think that was very thoughtful, very well said. With regards to diversity, I do agree the podcast could be a more diverse place. I think what people don't necessarily realize is the actual Punk News website is an extremely diverse place. I was thinking about it, and in fact, our news editors are almost all female. We've got Brittany, Britt, Kira, who am I missing? Leanne.
Britt Reiser.
Britt Reiser. And those are all our news. So we don't actually have any news editor guys, actually, even though I do some news sometimes. Our reviews editor is myself and Adam Eisenberg. Our interviews editor is Kira Wisniewski. She's a girl. I think punk news itself is pretty diverse in that we've got people of all genders. We've got people of all backgrounds. We got white people. We got Asian people. We got Hispanic people. We got black people. We've got, let's see, who else? We've got straight people. We've got queer people. We've got people from the United States, Canada. We've got people from England. So I think punk news is pretty diverse. I do agree that the podcast itself actually isn't really diverse. It's usually just us dudes hanging out. I certainly would love to have more girls in the podcast. We've never said no girls on the podcast or anything like that. Basically, any of our female editors that want to be on the podcast anytime can be on the podcast anytime they want. And that actually kind of brings up an issue. Most of our female editors, they're usually, I guess, busy doing things for the podcast, whereas me and Adam White are hanging around thinking about the Cro-Mags. And I was thinking about, we've talked about this before on the podcast. When I go to record conventions, it's mostly guys. I think maybe a little bit more girls than it used to be, but record conventions are still mostly guys, just like the podcast is still mostly guys. So before we go off on a tangent, I do want to say that, I mean, women are always welcome on the podcast. If any women want to be on the podcast, send me an email, podcast@punknews.org, and we'll have you on. Simple as that. But I guess we don't need to talk about record conventions right now because it's off topic. I shouldn't have brought it up. Why do you guys, not necessarily, let's ask the punk news listeners, why are record conventions generally mostly guys? People can disagree with that thesis, but I think it's fairly true, especially if you go to like dad record conventions or hillbilly record conventions. Maybe punk rock record conventions have more girls, but dad record conventions are like 90% guys, and I don't know why that is. The sellers, though, are more often female, which is interesting. Anyways, the point is we'd love to have more girls on the podcast. If you're a girl and want to be on the podcast, send me an email, podcast@punknews.org. We'll have you on. Simple as that. Let's play a tune and get this news kicked off, unless any of you guys want to react to that letter.
No, we can, just in brief, that was super thoughtful. I'm glad that people, you know, write in and consider that kind of thing, especially, I guess, looking at the podcast through that lens. I mean, the way that this sucker is kind of organized on the back end is that every week we kind of throw it out to the wider punk news community, everyone involved, that I mean the editor community, not like the world, that, you know, we're doing the show this night at this time, whoever wants to be on. And I want to say that everyone that doesn't come on here probably has something way better to do than talk to John and I.
And hey, Ricky, welcome to the podcast.
And yeah,
that's no, cool. I'll go fuck myself. It's fine.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the ongoing theme week on week here. We don't discourage anyone from joining in. I think they're all just smarter.
Well, you know, what else I was going to say is, you know, I don't know if this listener has watched the 200th episode on YouTube.
And if you did, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, my point is that
episode 200 ruled. I mean, really.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Episode 200 ruled, man. We had live music from World Inferno. We had live music from Mischief Brew, live music from Crazy in the Brains, an interview with Adam White, even though he's talking shit on it now.
All right. I apologize for everything except for the live music from people who aren't us.
But my point is, you actually can see as a listener that there was a good spectrum of people.
True.
That decided to join in. And there were people that were trying to get on, but for some reason couldn't or whatever. I don't know.
True. But Dana is correct in that we rarely have girls on the podcast. We used to have Britt Reiser on fairly frequently, and we used to have Brittany Strummer on fairly frequently. I think they're just.
And way back in the day, Kira used to be on
it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, well, I'm definitely pro having more girls on the podcast. And, well, that's that. What else can I say? If they want to be on, they can be on. So anyway, let's play a track. Adam, what, you got a track for us?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll play a track for you here. So we posted some news just in the past week that there is a reissue coming out from a guy named B.A. Johnston. Now, if you're a maybe an Ontario-based.
That sounds like a porn star. I'm sorry, B.A. Johnson.
take a look at B.A. Johnson.
Let me take a look at B.A. Johnson.
He's not the kind of guy that you would want to be your porn star. B.A. Johnson is sort of infamous in the Southern Ontario music scene. He is ostensibly he is a guy with an acoustic guitar playing songs, but he embodies this. This sad loser persona, so with so much fervor that his act has become somewhat legendary. Now Noisy the other day wrote about him, and they compared him to Canada. They called him Canada's Gigi Allen. No, that's not at all right. But I mean musically not really. I guess in that he's a particular kind of maniac who has an infamous stage show. I guess we can go that way, but he's not, you know, he's not pooping on you or anything like that. But anyways, so B.A. Johnson, he had a record that came out 10 years ago now called My Heart is a Blinking Nintendo. And this thing has been reissued recently. And so the vinyl is being reissued by Mammoth Cave Recordings. And it's also being put out on cassette for the first time by Blacktop Records at Welland, Ontario, which is just down the road from me here. And Ben over at Blacktop really wanted me to post this and tell everyone about it. And I had, for some reason, never crossed paths with B.A. Johnson at shows around here. But then when I started listening to his stuff, it's absolutely hilarious. And I burned through like 3 records the other day. And I'm super into it now, and I have to go find some of it to own. So anyways, I'm going to play a song from B.A. Johnston's My Heart is a Blinking Nintendo. The song we're going to play is called Have Fun on Warp Tour. And this would have been from 10 years ago. So what, 2005-ish? So here you go. So this is Have Fun on Warp Tour by B.A. Johnson.
Have fun on warp. Have fun on warp tour. Take off his wristbands when he holds you in his mom's car. Cool rock and roll bullet belts, cool rock and roll haircuts. And I have no one to blame but myself, and it's all my fault. I've been replaced by a 23-year-old emo fuckball, and it burns me worse than wedgies. Reminder the ancestors, one learn not to trust myself. Every instinct is wrong. Don't wanna see you with that pinhead on your arm. Better burn your CDs, CDs, and watch the extreme games on TV. Cool Tony Hawk video games, enough pot to keep you dazed. And as usual, no one to blame but myself, 'cause it's all my fault. I've been replaced by a 23-year-old emo fuckball, and it burns me worse than wedgies. Reminder the ancestors, well, I learned not to trust myself when every instinct is wrong. Don't wanna see you with that pinhead on your arm.
And we are back, and that was B.A. Johnson telling us to have fun on Warped Tour. Adam, I dug that. Wacky. I love the wild. I love the wacky. I love the weird stuff. I'm totally down with B.A. Johnson. Let's talk about something that not everybody is down with, although actually I support Fat Mike on this. As you all know by now, I'm sure, I guess about a week ago, Fat Mike was at a show in Sydney. Before the show started, he said, my neck's hurting. Please don't jump up on stage and touch me. However, while they were playing, a young fellow, he looks to be about, he's pretty young, I don't know, 19, 20, 21, he jumps up on stage and goes to sing with Fat Mike in the microphone. But what looks like happened, and I don't know if anyone's exactly sure what happened, is the young fellow jumped up there and kind of touched Mike's shoulder. Mike kind of seemed to react by instinct and smashed him with the elbow, and it knocked the kid down. Then when the kid went to get back up, Fat Mike kicked him in the head with a boot. And it led the kid out pretty bad, although he did walk off stage, so he didn't get, like, knocked out. Well, a lot of people were upset about that. A lot of people said Fat Mike acted too aggressively. A lot of people said Fat Mike did exactly what any person would do in that situation, especially with their neck hurt. Well, after that, basically, NoFX kind of, they did apologize. They spoke to the kid on Twitter. They said, listen, come to our show on November 7th. We'll have you on stage to sing Linoleum with us, and we'll give you a t-shirt, and we'll buy you a beer. And that's exactly what happened. So they actually custom made a t-shirt for him, which was kind of funny. And if there's anything, it's NoFX knows how to spin PR, I'll tell you that, and I admire them for that. And so the kid was happy, the band was happy. It did not end up ending the band's career, unlike Ben Weasel. I've got a lot of opinions on this, but I'll let you guys go first. Did Fat Mike overreact when he booted the kid? Does Fat Mike know how to appropriately handle damage control when the public at large seems to be against him?
I think that the internet collectively completely overreacted to this.
Yes.
Because if you take a look at the video, so there's two videos. The first one is Mike on stage. Basically, he's telling people to stop throwing shit at him because he can't dodge out of the way because his neck hurts. And he's talking all throughout the show that, yeah, okay, my neck hurts. I had to go to the doctor. I wasn't even sure if I could play this show. So then this kid jumps up on stage and he goes to completely amicably, you know, throw his arm around Mike and sing in the mic with him. And Mike, yeah, so Mike elbows him off. The kid falls down, and then, yeah, so I'm not sure if he tried to keep him down or if he just turned around and swung the boot at him maliciously, but whatever. It was like a split-second thing, if you actually see it on video. It did not strike me as something where I have to, like, think a lot about, like, you know, Mike's motivations in it or Mike's respect for the fans or anything like that. I don't know. To me, it seemed like a kind of wacky, you know, hey, you jumped on the stage and tried to jump on someone and then they kicked you in the head. Punk rock, right? Like, I'm okay with that. Now, I totally realize that I'm completely blowing this off. And at the same time, what about Ben Weasel? And to me, there is a big difference between guy tries to jump you on stage when you've already said you're in pain. So you knock him down and you give him a kick. And that all happens in a split second. To me, that's totally different than the Ben Weasel situation, in which Ben is annoyed, rightfully or wrongfully, and gets so mad that he hulks out and jumps off stage and punches someone in the face. I think that is, I don't know, to me, that's night and day in terms of reaction time, I guess. But yeah, so I don't see this in the same light or anything like that. But I don't know. I think the whole thing was handled fairly well. The kid jumped online. He went on the Twitter, like, after the show, and he was like, yeah, that was me. Sorry, I was super drunk, which is kind of a funny explanation for it. You know, Mike apologizes for giving him the boot, and then they showed up at the next show, and they all kind of made fun of it. And he has this awesome T-shirt that says, NoFX is Australian for boot. So it became this kind of very fun little feel-good story. And you know, honestly, the first time I've seen NoFX mentioned in certain places online where I've never seen them. Like, it was like front page news on Gawker. Like, when's the last time they gave a shit about NoFX, if ever, right? So, yeah, it was interesting to see the reaction. I think the reaction to all this was more the story than the boot itself. And actually, when this came up in the Secret Punk News editorial cabal, the initial question wasn't like, holy crap, we have this salacious video we have to share. The question was like, do we post this as news at all? And initially I was like, no. And then I was like, well, I mean, I guess it's news in that the internet's going crazy about it. Like,
that's news.
It's news in that it's news, right? It's not so much like, you know, if someone came to us with like the secret exclusive, you know, Mike kicked some kid story, I don't know if we would necessarily go to break it. And it was funny because after it took us like a day or so to get this thing up because, well, A, we wanted to write it so that the article reflected what I just said, but also just because, you know, punk news is run by people that have other shit to do. So we get it up, and then someone commented like, oh, I submitted this news like an hour after it happened. What the hell? I mean, what do you mean, what the hell? Like this is breaking? Like, we need to get this? Like, the world needs to know immediately that, you know, in another time zone, Mike kicked some kid in the head during a show. I kind of expect kids get kicked in the heads during shows all the time for all sorts of reasons, and we don't make that breaking news. So, I don't know. I'm completely blown away that this became the story that it did.
Yeah.
And I think that at least within our circles, it became more of a story because Ben Weasel decided to like hitch his wagon to it than anything else. At least he kept fanning the flames of it by trying to like tie it into his own predicament. But I don't know. It's weird. I don't want to feel like I'm like minimizing, I don't know, violence, but it feels kind of, I don't know, it feels weird to me even really call it that. So yeah, that's, I don't know, that's my opinion. I'm on Mike's side on this one here, I guess. I'll take my check now, Fat.
I agree. I think Mike told the crowd like more than once not to mess with about his back and how it hurt and stuff like that. I think the video itself looked a lot worse than what really happened. The kid even says he was hammered, so he probably fell down a lot easier than what it looked like. And I think the boot to the face was just pure instinct on Mike's part, but he told him, and I think this is much more different than punching a woman in the face because you're pissed off. This guy like actually invaded Mike's space with like a ton of warning ahead of time not to do that. But it was handled well. I mean, they settled it amicably, and that's it. Now the thing was, it was trending even on Facebook. And the way I knew it was fairly big news was because my dad separately told me about it when it happened.
I had the same thing happen where like people who are not in my punk rock life, but are in like my, I don't know, my business life, say, were sending me the link to it and being like, yeah, hey, you're into punk rock. Here, look at this. And I'm like, really? You guys know about this?
Yeah. And so I think the guy tweeted like the injuries and they weren't as bad as they looked or something like that. So listen, they handled it nicely. I think there was a TMZ video where the kid actually got to kick Mike back in the shin later, and it's all good now. Ben Weasel just kind of a dick the whole way through though, right?
What's new?
So yeah, I mean, Fat Mike actually, I know he comes up, he acts like kind of like, you know, like this I don't give a fuck attitude, but he does in the end he does care. So no, this was completely different.
Actually, you know, Ricky, I think you just brought up a very salient and perceptive point. Fat Mike does like to act like he doesn't care about what people say about him and stuff, but I think he does care, and I think he does care about his fans and whether or not people have a good time at the show.
Yeah, if he didn't, then he wouldn't have you know, let the kid kick him and let him sing on stage. I mean, they really like gave the guy a lot back after what happened.
What annoys me is the kid is completely in the wrong here. One area where I disagree with certain segments of punk rock is that I don't think the punk rock show, and this is what Dana talked about, I don't think the punk rock show is safety zone. I think punk rock show is the punk rock show. And even more than that, I don't think the stage is safety zone. The stage is the stage. I think increasingly we're having a devaluation and almost a humiliation of our artists in that if you're walking down the street and somebody jumps on you or grabs you by the shoulder or when your shoulder hurts, you would definitely be in your right to like turn around and, you know, react instinctually. But somehow because it's the punk rock show, people can jump on artists and, you know, elbow them and shove them aside and smash into them and jump up in their personal space. That's unacceptable. I mean, I'm completely happy with a compact that, you know, you can jump up on the stage, but you might get whomped, you know. I mean, back in the day, people used to get hit on the stage all the time. I don't necessarily know that as a virtue of punk rock, but when you're playing explosive, wild punk rock music, the stage is not the safety zone. The stage is the area for the band, and if you get up there, that's at your own risk.
I just find it really, it's just really self-centered and completely... if you go up on stage and you try and steal the show and sing with them, I get what you're doing. You're trying to have fun. At the same time, it's incredibly self-centered to get up there and think you're the rock star for 3.5 seconds, you know? And also if I were up there performing, I'd be really worried about like my gear.
Well, that's true, too. Along those lines, it's one thing that does annoy me about punk rock fans, and maybe people in general, but it seems especially with punk rock fans, is they have, and I don't mean all, I mean a few, they have a very low ability to place themselves in another person's shoes. Like people are like, how could Fat Mike elbow that guy? How could Fat Mike kick that people? And so much of people saying that have never been in an adrenaline situation before, you know? It's not like Fat Mike was standing there. He said to himself, someone is touching me. I will elbow this person. Now that I've elbowed this person, I will kick them. That's not what was going through your mind in a situation like that. And you're in that situation, your adrenaline's pumping, you're playing music. Something, you don't even know what it is thrashing at you. You jerk, and then, like, you kick, like, instinctually. It just... You know, if you ever played a sport, if you've ever been in a fist fight, it's not like you think, now I will punch. Now I will try to, you know, move my head so he doesn't hit me. It's wham, 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 wham. Like, there's no time for thought. So this whole video took like 4 seconds. People saying Fat Mike shouldn't have kicked him have obviously never been in a situation where adrenaline is going through you and instinct takes over. So therefore, I'm 100% Fat Mike's side. I think it's impressive how he kind of spun this in a positive direction. I think that shows that he's a smart businessman. And I mean, I'm not the biggest NoFX fan, but I back Fat Mike on this one 100%.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree there. It was a good traffic story for us.
Now, a story that was not a good traffic story, much to my dismay, the Buzzcocks. They've got a new album out, one of Adam White's favorite bands. The Buzzcocks' new album is called The Way. It's streaming over Pitchfork, and you can hear it until the album is out November 18. Adam White, Mr. Buzzcock Maniac, did you dig this album?
I don't know. I very much appreciate how they've traded... They can't do what they did when they were kids. So they can't do like, you know, they can't do this like I'm a twitched out sex crazy, you know, awkward teenager thing, you know, when they're 60. I get that. So that's fine. And I really like that they've sort of replaced that by taking on this persona where like they're like a really confident garage band right now. They sound heavier than they ever did in their youth. They, you know, they're doing things that are, you know, a little bit more, I think, you know, traditional kind of rock and roll sounding songs than they ever did when they were youth. But I think that fits them with their age. I've yet to been grabbed by this record, though. Like, I don't see the... I'm not hearing the one or two big hooks that would... That would really bring me in here. That would, and I think that there were definitely a lot of them on the 2000, not the 2000. I keep there. What was it, 2000? I don't know. The self-titled record that had come out, which was their big sort of like return to form in the modern era here. That record had a lot of hooks. It was a lot of really good stuff on it. It's still one of my favorite records. It's really good. And I don't know if that's because they had like a lot of songwriting pent up when they got into there. Because the follow-up, Flatpak Philosophy, I liked, but it wasn't as good. It didn't seem as new to me. And this one is like, you know, if I'm ranking them, this is number 3. So, you know, I'm going to keep listening to it because I'm looking for where it's going to grab me. But so far it hasn't. But, you know, hey, I like hearing Buzzcocks stuff. I like hearing this modern rejuvenated Buzzcocks stuff. So, I mean, I'm cool with it. I'm just, you know, it's not record of the year or anything yet.
I thought it had this. I think it was just a little bit more. It still had their sound, but I thought it was a bit more polished and a little more produced than what I think we typically get from these guys. But I'm not as big of a fan of the Buzzcocks as Adam though.
I agree with everything. I think it's a good album, maybe not a great album. I like the muscular sound they have. It's a worthy addition to the catalog. Not going to blow anybody's minds. Speaking of something that is blowing people's minds, an intrepid game designer. His name is... I forget his name, actually, but we can look it up later. He made versions of classic 8-bit Nintendo games, but he put in guys from the punk rock universe. For example... Milo of the Descendants is now the main guy for the game Kung Fu. Mikey Erg is now in Super Mario Brothers as Super Mario. Danzig is Mega Man, and Fat Mike is in the golfing game from Nintendo. Did you guys play any of these games? And also, I don't know if you want to address the minor controversy we had over on the Punk News website. Do you guys think that's worth talking about?
I think you should clarify what you meant.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that in a sec. So okay. I guess so. First of all, I didn't play any of these for more than like 4 or 5 seconds just to kind of see what they look like. So from my understanding of this, is the programmer that put this together? He went and he got a bunch of NES ROMs. So
Jeff Hong.
Yeah, yeah. So he grabbed like the software versions of the code that was on these NES cartridges back in the day that, you know, people have found a way to play on their computers or on the internet with this emulator software. And there's been a lot of people that will take these games and then start unraveling the code behind them and making modifications to these games from the 80s. So I guess that's what he's done here. And he's gone in and he's replaced, as far as I saw, what he's done is he's gone in and replaced the sprites that were in the games originally. So, like, replaced, like, elements of the graphic work with the punk rock stuff. So he's gone out and he's drawn a little Mike Yerg in pixels and replaced the Mario graphics and animations with the Mike Yerg graphics and animations. But as far as I saw, and again, I didn't play this more than a few seconds, really, I think that's the modification. Is it's you know, he's palette swapped in, you know, Danzig for Mega Man or whatever, but as far as the rest of it goes, you know, he may have changed the title screens, but I think it's just the original games otherwise, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, because I didn't know if like all of a sudden that, you know, you're going to start fighting things that are like punk rock related or there's going to be music in the games or anything like that. It doesn't seem to be. So I mean, so looking at it from that perspective, like, it's cute. Like, I got like a chuckle out of seeing, if nothing else, just the cover art that he made for him, which was really neat. But I don't know how much time one is supposed to spend with this, you know?
That's what I was gonna ask him, like, the whole time. Like, I played one of them, but I was wondering, like, who has the time to do this and how much time went into this?
Well, I don't want to minimize again what he did, because it might be harder than I thought. But I got to imagine that in the original Mega Man or whatever, there's probably only like a dozen or so, you know, various pictures of Mega Man that you'd have to redraw as Danzig. And then just insert it back into the original code. So, you know, you could sit there and play that game for an hour and a half, but it's basically just playing Mega Man for an hour and a half. And then at what point does the fact that it's Danzig stop being a novelty? And then you're like, hey, I'm playing this old Nintendo game with my keyboard in this tiny little screen. Maybe I should go out and try to, you know, feed some orphans or something.
I actually played Mega Man, like, legit through this, because I never played Mega Man before. I played Mega Man 2 briefly way back in the day, and I was actually genuinely playing it as Mega Man, not even as Danzig Mega Man, just, like, Mega Man, and man, that's one hard game. A related thing is, we talked about this in the Secret Punk News Catacombs before posting this, is I thought some of the games might be a little offensive. I should preface that by saying that I don't think offensive art is any less valid than inoffensive art, and sometimes offensive art is actually more valid or more powerful than inoffensive art. I don't think that's not a reason not to post any things, but we're kind of in a rock and a hard place if something is offensive. If we don't say it's offensive, then people say, you know, why is Punk News posting this offensive thing, or why is Punk News validating this offensive thing? But then if we do say it's offensive, then people say, this isn't offensive, it's just art, or it's commenting on offensive things. So, you know, it's a lose-lose situation. So I said, we'll just say it's slightly offensive and then let people yell at us like they always do. So I said, note, some of the games may be considered offensive by some viewers. Punk News does not necessarily endorse the games featured on the link page, except Mikey Erg. We endorse him, which is certainly true. And people were saying, well, John, what's offensive about these games? And I honestly thought there were several things that were offensive. Not so offensive that these games shouldn't be enjoyed or appreciated. But some things that are slightly offensive. I think the main thing that I found offensive with this game called Racist Alley. And I believe, I'm not even sure, but I believe the game is commenting on the tragedy of the Trayvon Martin case. In that basically, in Racist Alley, you shoot young African-American gentlemen. And it's saying, you know, in America, America is so messed up with its certain laws that you can shoot young black guys and get away with it. And I think that's what the game's saying. But I'm not even sure about that. So I think that could have been done better. But what I did find offensive about that, well, two things. The first thing is I said to myself, even though it's a joke and even though it's commenting on race relations in America, what if Trayvon Martin's mother saw an image of her young son getting shot by people playing this game? You know, that's what I found most offensive. You know, I mean, could anyone show that to Trayvon Martin's mom? Say, well, we're commenting on things. You know, I thought, I mean, if she saw that, she would break down crying. You know, I'm sure she's crying right now. So that's what I found most offensive. Not that I don't think it's not necessarily valid art, but I do think that's mildly offensive. The second thing is maybe this is just me, but some of the depictions of the African-American gentleman seem to be kind of minstrel act-ish to me. Like, they seem to, like, accentuate certain characteristics that is considered offensive, you know, and that they would do, like, minstrel shows and stuff. So I thought maybe that was a little poorly done. The other thing that I thought was offensive was in the original gay Popeye, where it switches Brutus and olive oil, but then in switching Brutus and olive oil, Popeye is punching olive oil. So you're playing a game where you punch olive oil, who's a woman. So is it offensive to be playing a video game where you're a guy whose objective is to hit a woman? That's kind of offensive, right? So that's what I thought was offensive. I don't think the designer, Jeff Hong, meant anything bad by that. I don't think he was trying to be shocking. But, I mean, you know, if we're going to say Nick Oliveri is offensive or something like that, well, then certainly video games where you're shooting people have actually been shot in real life, or video games where you're trying to hit women, then this is at least mildly offensive, you know. I mean, there's way more offensive things out there, but I thought this was mildly offensive.
I'm not quite sure about the artistic choice that went into including
Trayvon Martin.
We're including that game or the gay Popeye game to it, only because, like, all the rest of them were like, I get the theme here. We're gonna take punk rock people and insert them into these classic games. I can kind of see the motivation between the other two things, where he's saying, we're going to take these, like, punk rock social values and reflect them in these old games, even if we're not necessarily using, like, a punk rock figure in them. And I guess that's why they were included, but it's a little bit of a stretch to me. Like, he could have easily left, you know, those two games off this list, made a whole separate little project, which was called, you know, social commentary games or something, right?
Which
is totally sort of boring, and I'm sorry that I suggested that. But you know what I mean, right? Where it didn't quite seem to match the theme of the thing. And when I scrolled down and I saw those, I looked at them for a minute and I was like, what? Oh, okay, I guess. Like this is where we ran out of ideas. Right. Yeah. So, but I don't know. I don't want to. I hate crapping on someone's fun little project here. So, you know, it's good for a laugh, I guess, to go check it out.
I think just playing it safe. You know, I think this was cool. But having the little warning there, that can't hurt. That way you can't get yelled at for advocating for something that might be offensive.
Yeah. People yell at John anyways.
I know that, but you
people
know,
yell at me, but even in articles I have nothing to do with. It'll be like an article about, like, Restoration have a new album out, you know, posted by Sam. And people are like, I hate John, you know. But listen, I don't want to make this a boohoo party about John, because honestly, I have a great time at Punk News. We got lots of great readers, and I love most of our readers. Most of our readers are great people. And so to that end, I'm going to give our readers and our listeners, our treasured and valued listeners, a little bit of a treat here. A little while ago, I saw Leftover Crack. They were very good, played two new songs. One song was fantastic. It was called their Slayer song. One song was pretty good. It was called their pop punk song. Ricky, you're a Leftover Crack fan, aren't you?
I'm really jealous you got to listen to those new songs.
Yeah, they're pretty good. So to that end, we're going to do a little bit of a treat for one of our listeners. the listeners probably know, Choking Victim developed in The Leftover Crack. It's essentially the same band. Choking Victim did a song called Infested. It's probably my favorite Choking Victim song. Few people know that Leftover Crack also did a version of Infested, but they never released it. For your musical enjoyment, from back in 2004, I think, we are going to listen to the Leftover Crack version of Infested. And this is John G. back again. We're going to blast through some of these articles. We're going to go quick. We're running a little long tonight, so we're going to snap this up. I hope you enjoyed that. Leftover Crack's got a new album coming out in 2015 or so. I'm excited. I think a lot of it's been recorded, so I'm excited. Related to ska, if you will, Jesse Michaels has released a new short film. It's his second short film. His first short film was called Horizon Bastard. The new one is called Strike Force Condor, and it's sort of a sequel to Horizon Bastard. In this movie, Jesse Michaels, playing a guy called Yunky, goes to game night, and all his friends at game night are, like, really mean to him. So apparently Yunky's special skill, like, his magical power is he can spit paint. So his friends are mean to him, so he spits paint on them and then goes home, and his girlfriend is disgusted by him, and that's the end of the film. It's very avant-garde-ish. Jesse Michaels has said he was influenced by David Lynch. What I really appreciate about these is there's almost a plot. It's not just like randomness. There's almost a plot there that you can almost put together, but it's missing a few things. So it really makes you forced to think, to figure out what's going on here. I love these videos.
I'm way more on board with this than I was earlier.
Oh, pourquoi?
Because I don't know. Because the Horizon Bastard was...
I love that one, Adam.
It was really, really weird, of course, but it was weird from the... I guess from the... Because I didn't realize that this was a series when I saw it.
I don't think anybody did.
I just kind of looked at it and I was like, okay, that was... You know, I don't know if that was worth everyone's time to make that weird thing, but whatever. But this next thing, like, takes it to a way different level in that I don't know, in that it's a bit longer and there's plot and the whole thing is just completely, I don't want to know. I don't know if surreal is the right word for it, because it's completely aware of itself being surreal. So it's, I don't know if it's like ironically surreal or whatever, but anyways, I was endeared by how bananas it kind of gets by the end. So, yeah, I'm cool with this now. I want more.
I love, he's like, I'll show you. And he goes, yeah. And he like roars and spits paint at them. Oh God, I love it. It's so weird.
I think it's kind of adorable when he gets mad and he like throws the chair.
They're like, are you fucking that chair? You have to see this, Pung News listeners. You have to see this video. Ricky, where do you stand on Strike Force Condor?
Until you explained it to me, I thought this was out of fucking nowhere. I did not get it at all. But it was entertaining. I just did not know what the reference. I didn't really know what it was for, really, or the purpose of it. But now that I got a bit of an explanation,
I would love to hear it. The conversation between like all of Jesse's friends and him when he's like, okay, I got this idea. You guys got to be in this.
Yeah, to be in the writer's room would be interesting.
And lays out the plan.
Did you guys catch the name of his cat? Oh, every video features his hairless cat. Did you see the name of his hairless cat?
No.
Patty Smith. speaking of hairless cats, Steve Ignorant of Crass, of course, lead vocalist of Crass. He also sang in Conflict and Schwarzenegger, and he sang in the new band. He's got a new band called like The Lamp Post. Well, if you guys remember, back in 2007 and 2008, he did a couple of tours where he did all Crass music. The first one was called The Feeding of the 5,000, and he played all of Crass's first album. Second tour he did was called The Last Supper, where he said, this is going to be the last time ever where I'm going to play Crass music. And he did a gigantic, about 35-song set of Crass tunes. I saw it in San Francisco, and actually there was like protesters outside and everything, which was ridiculous. But he's releasing CDs of these recordings. I'm so excited. I can't wait to get. I mean, I really, really. I actually, in my review, put I wanted a live CD of this, and 4 years later, I'm getting my wish. Or 5 years later, I'm getting my wish. I'm super excited to hear these recordings. I've actually ordered them already. I can't wait to hear these live Steve Ignorant doing Crass shows, because the fact is, Crass has like 3 live albums, but only one of them is any good. Crass has 5 live albums, 5 official live albums. There's the live album on Stations of the Crass. There's the live album on Christ the Album. There's You'll Ruin It for Everyone. And there's Christ the Bootleg. So there's 4. And then there's the bonus tracks on. There's the bonus tracks on the remaster of Stations of the Crass. But there's only really one good full-length live album. And that's the one on Stations of the Crass, which is a great live album. So the more live Crass, the better. I'm excited.
What were they protesting at the show?
They were protesting that Steve Ignorant was, A, charging money for Crass music, and B, that he was playing Crass music without the other members of Crass. And my opinion was then, it is now, and it's the same for all these types of things. No one's saying it's Crass. No one's going to these shows saying, oh, I can't wait to see Crass. It's Steve Ignorant playing songs that he wrote or had a part in writing, so people get to hear them live. No one in their entire life ever wrote a song for it not to be played. So the more times songs are played, the better, in my opinion, and it kicked ass.
That was decisive, John.
Yeah. Well, speaking of me being decisive, I mean, that's how I feel. It's not 1984. You're not going to get to hear Crass. But if Steve Ignorant wants to play Crass music, I'm definitely willing to hear it, because at least I'll get to hear some version of it live. And the fact is, it was an awesome. It's not like they phoned it in. They kicked ass. They did like 35 songs. It was awesome.
All right. So I want you to tell us about this next one here. So early French hardcore goth group Les Vandals.
I think it means the Vandals, but I don't even know.
I'm pretty sure it does, have reformed. So the band is currently reissuing their records. The first reissue is of a live show called Live at PAX, which is going to be released digitally and via CD. The band was originally active from 1984 through 1986. So they have been off the deck for a long time here. Off the deck, is that a word? Off the board? Let's say off the board. It's not a boat. Anyways, they're also going to play some live shows soon. So you can check out a few of their songs over on Punk News. We're streaming one right now called Bonnie and Clyde. John, How did you uncover this piece of news?
Well, I'll tell you, it is, I know nothing about this band, essentially, but in the Punk News submission thing, there was a thing written in broken English. It was from the main guy of the band, and he says, listen, I'm really proud, I mean, I'm paraphrasing quite a great deal. It's like, I'm really proud of my band. Jello Biafra was a fan back in the day. We got a review in Maximum Rock and Roll. I'm reissuing these recordings. Would you do a short news post about it? I checked out these tunes. These tunes are really, really cool goth/hardcore songs. If you like Ink and Dagger or that kind of thing, like hardcore that's like kind of goth and spooky, then you'll like this. I checked this out. These songs are really, really, really neat. So, you know, I mean, it's not like we're, you know, devoting several specials to it. It's one news post. I thought this was cool, and I think people should check it out, you know? I mean, I'm always checking out old and new music, and I guess the point of me putting up this post was two things. A, check out this band, because this band is cool. I don't know that much about them, but I definitely want to learn more. And also, keep your ears open. Just because you never heard of something or don't know anything about something, it might be cool. So check out new stuff and old stuff. That's my opinion.
Cool. All right. Well, I guess we should wrap up right now with a little chat about Mr. CJ Ramone here. So CJ has released his new single off his upcoming album. The track is titled Last Chance to Dance, and it's off the LP of the same name. The album is due out on November 25th via Fat Wreck, I believe, right?
Yes.
Fat Wreck. So new CJ Ramone song, which is really fun, well, to me. John, you've been championing this for a little while, eh?
I would say I've been championing it. Anybody that's a Ramone, I give deference to, because if you did time in the Ramones, you are a punk rock legend and you deserve some respect. I dug this track. You know, what's interesting, though, is now everyone's like, I love CJ. But people forget 4 years ago, everyone was like, CJ was the worst Ramone. I hate CJ. My opinion was, if CJ's cool enough for Johnny and Joey, he's cool enough for me, you know? So I think the reason people love CJ now is it's sort of this morbid characteristic of the punk rock scene. Now that all the Ramones are dead, everyone wants to love the Ramones again instead of when they were alive, you know? But, you know, this is cool. I was CJ the best. I thought this was very Ramonesy. Maybe could use a little bit more firepower, but I dug this. I'm definitely going to check out his album.
Now, had you been following anything that he had been doing before this? Because, like, he was really off my radar. So, like, I know he was in Bad Chopper, but I had not been listening to anything that they had put out. So, I don't know if it's, like, by trading under his own name or by getting involved with Fat, it somehow could, like, catapulted him back into relevance for us. But I was completely unaware of what CJ Ramone was up to.
I was aware of Bad Chopper, but the only reason I was aware of Bad Chopper is because I've got a couple compilations of, you know, Ramones stuff after they broke up, which usually have a lot of rare Ramones tracks on it. Bad Chopper is fairly Ramones. This fun fact, one of the members of Bad Chopper is the dad of the girls in Summer Twins, FYI.
Huh.
Fun fact, all right. I mean, it also bears mentioning, I guess, that, like, that CJ's current band also features Steve Soto. So,
Yes, I forgot. That's cool.
Yeah, so you know, he's hardly, you know, doing this with unknowns or anything like that at this point, too. So Steve Soto, of course, started the Adolescents and, you know, played in Agent Orange. So everyone knows Steve Soto. So anyways, I don't really know how much to say about this. It's fun and Ramonesy and, like, inoffensive in sort of that charming and innocent way that Ramone's stuff was. And normally you would
I gotta interrupt you. I think a lot of Ramone's stuff is quite dark.
No. But this I'm not saying in totality. I mean that, like, you know, Joey had this thing that he got from girl groups that where he could play these love songs that were. That didn't go dark, right? That were completely innocent, and this kind of has some of that.
Mm.
I wasn't saying that the Ramones couldn't go dark; they could totally go dark. But you know, this had a lot of that innocence that you'd normally kind of like attribute to Joey in particular. So I don't know. This was cool. I like this. I'm really looking forward to hearing this record. I think I might enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, I thought this was a really fun track too, and I thought this was it seemed like more of a little bit of an updated Ramones song. I mean, Ramones-esque song. And I also totally noticed the innocence in the lyrics that we heard I think from The lyrics kind of reminded me of something from something you'd hear from the 1950s, the early rock and roll stuff that the Ramones used to do a lot. So
it's funny though, because if I heard Masked Intruder doing this song, yeah, my opinion would be like, stop putting on this innocent shtick. Like, I know it's shtick, stop it. Right? Yeah,
true. But I would argue that is the genius of the Ramones, and that the Ramones have balls behind their music. Like they, you know, do you want to dance under the spotlight? You know, but like underneath, it's like womp womp womp, like very hard driving music. But also, when they sing about these lovey-dovey things, they also have they have very dark, you know, like 53rd and 3rd, one of the darkest songs ever written. You know, so the Ramones were able to balance it. While a lot of the newer punk pop bands that were influenced by the Ramones, a lot of the Ramones core band, they just focus on the bubblegum and ignore the power and also ignore the darkness underneath. And with Ramones, even some of their happy songs, like you were saying, Adam, have a darkness underneath, which so many Ramones core bands just ignore.
You know, I when listening to this CJ Ramone song, it totally reminded me of I Love Her So from Leave Home. Mm. That's where I got. That's kind of how I drew the connection.
Well, there you have it. You kids should all leave home. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Adam White, congrats on the Pepino. I know you'll be a great dad a second time around. And if you're not, well, you know, whatever. You know, just, you know, get off for a pack of cigarettes and never come back, you know?
I can start.
So, Adam White, thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Sorry to the listeners if I sound like shit tonight. I think I'm coming down with some sort of death cold.
Yeah, I'm sick myself. And Ricky Frankel, always the legend, Tricky Ricky, scoring an hour and a half interview with Edward Culver. Insane! Insane!
I was at his house for like 3 hours, too. That's what was crazy.
I've interviewed Buzz Osborne of the Melvins like 10 times. I get 15 minutes. Ricky Frankel interviews a guy once. He gets 3 hours.
And I'm also coming down from seeing Bad Religion, so I'm still on that high, too.
Well, fantastic. Ricky, keep up the good work. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org, and we'll see you next week.